So this is Exodus chapter 39, starting at verse 1. From the blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, they made woven garments for ministering in the sanctuary. They also made sacred garments for Aaron, as the Lord commanded Moses. They made the ephod of gold, and of blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, and of finely twisted linen. They hammered out thin sheets of gold, and cut strands to be worked into the blue, purple, and scarlet yarn and fine linen, the work of a skilled craftsman. They made shoulder pieces for the ephod, which were attached to two of its corners, so that it could be fastened. Its skillfully woven waistband was like it, of one piece with the ephod, and made with gold, and with blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, and with finely twisted linen, as the Lord commanded. They mounted the onyx stones in gold filigree settings, and engraved them like a seal with the names of the sons of Israel. Then they fastened them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod, as memorial stones for the sons of Israel, as the Lord commanded Moses. They fashioned the breastpiece, the work of a skilled craftsman. They made it like the ephod, of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and of finely twisted linen. It was square, a span long and a span wide, and folded double. Then they mounted four rows of precious stones on it. In the first row, there was a ruby, a topaz, and a beryl. In the second row, a turquoise, a sapphire, and an emerald. In the third row, a jacinth, an agate, and an amethyst. In the fourth row, a chrysolite, an onyx, and a jasper. They were mounted in gold filigree settings. There were 12 stones, one for each of the names of the sons of Israel, each engraved like a seal with the name of one of the 12 tribes. For the breastpiece, they made braided chains of pure gold, like a rope. They made two gold filigree settings and two gold rings, and fastened the rings to two of the corners of the breastpiece. They fastened the two gold chains to the rings at the corners of the breastpiece, and the other ends of the chains to the two settings, attaching them to the shoulder pieces of the ephod at the front. They made two gold rings and attached them to the other two corners of the breastpiece on the inside edge next to the ephod. Then they made two more gold rings and attached them to the bottom of the shoulder pieces on the front of the ephod, close to the seam just above the waistband of the ephod. They tied the rings of the breastpiece to the rings of the ephod with blue cord, connecting it to the waistband, so that the breastpiece would not swing out from the ephod, as the Lord commanded Moses. They made the robe of the ephod entirely of blue cloth, the work of a weaver, with an opening in the centre of the robe like the opening of a collar, and a band around this opening, so that it would not tear. They made pomegranates of blue, purple and scarlet yarn and finely twisted linen around the hem of the robe, and they made bells of pure gold and attached them around the hem between the pomegranates. Bells and pomegranates alternated around the hem of the robe to be worn for ministering, as the Lord commanded Moses. For Aaron and his sons, they made tunics of fine linen, the work of a weaver, and the turban of fine linen, linen headbands, and the undergarments of finely twisted linen. The sash was of finely twisted linen and purple, blue, and scarlet yarn, the work of an embroiderer, as the Lord commanded Moses. They made the plates, the sacred diadem, out of pure gold and engraved on it, like an inscription on the seal, holy to the Lord. Then they fastened a blue cord to it to attach it to the turban, as the Lord commanded Moses. So all the work on the tabernacle, the tent of meeting, was completed. The Israelites did everything just as the Lord commanded Moses. Then they brought the tabernacle to Moses, the tent and all its furnishings, its clasps, frames, crossbars, posts and bases, the covering of ram skins dyed red, the covering of hides of sea cows and the shielding curtain, the Ark of the Testimony with its poles and the atonement cover, the table with all its articles and the bread of the presence, the pure gold lampstand with its row of lamps and all its accessories and the oil for the lights, the gold altar, the anointing oil, the fragrant incense, and the curtain for the entrance to the tent, the bronze altar with its bronze grating, its poles and all its utensils, the basin with its stand, the curtains of the courtyard with its posts and bases and the curtain for the entrance to the courtyard, the ropes and tent pegs for the courtyard, all the furnishings for the tabernacle, the tent of meeting, and the woven garments worn for ministering in the sanctuary, both the sacred garments for Aaron the priest and the garments for his sons when serving as priests. The Israelites had done all the work just as the Lord commanded Moses. Moses inspected the work and saw that they had done it just as the Lord had commanded. So Moses blessed them.
Well, Mark, wondering if we could have the first slide, please. As I'm sure perhaps some of you know, that picture at the top left there is of Rory McIlroy, a professional golfer. He's Irish. He's won some tournaments and some trophies. He's done very well for himself as a professional golfer. He's currently sitting as number three in the world rankings as they go for professional golfers. Well, why am I showing you a picture of him with the Nike logo? Well, for this reason. He gets paid from Nike about $25 million a year to wear Nike clothes. Now, I don't know about you, but that's a lot of money to me. And it's a rather little bit ridiculous because he's got to do that anyway, hasn't he? He's got to wear clothes, so why pay him to do that? I don't know. But one of the consequences of that relationship or sponsorship with Nike is that they choose the clothes he's got to wear. I'm sure not all the time. He probably gets a little bit of flexibility to that. But it's also frustrating because it's the other way around for you and me, isn't it? Because if we want to wear Nike clothes, we've got to pay them for the privilege of doing that. And I don't know if he necessarily prefers Nike or Puma or Adidas. It's just a guess, but I imagine they pay him simply the most money to do so. And whether it's down to just money or not, I don't know. But choosing the right kind of sports gear for any professional is crucial. In fact, clothing accessories like golf shoes for a golfer, and for Rory, they're probably Nike as well. Well, it's pretty essential. And that principle of choosing the right set of clothes for whatever it is that you do, whether it be a job or a sport, well, it is important. But it's also important for the Christian, because the Christian must choose to wear the right clothes. They must, in a spiritual sense, choose to put on the right outfit as they follow Jesus. Because getting the wrong outfit, well, that can have disastrous consequences. When I was a site manager, if we had any tree surgeons come onto site, and I'm sure Andy will back me up here on this one afterwards, I had to make sure that the clothing that they were wearing met the current standards, met the current health and safety requirements. The trousers, for example, they had to meet a certain specification and be made of the right stuff. I mean, imagine with me being, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 feet up a tree with a chainsaw, and you slip with the chainsaw. It might not be the branch that you're cutting that ends up falling to the ground. But there's also a danger for the Christian, because if the Christian tries to wear the wrong clothes as they follow Jesus, there will only be disastrous consequences. But what does the Christian need to wear spiritually? That's the question for us this evening. What is the right outfit as we follow, or as you and I follow Jesus, if we do that this evening? Exodus 39 will answer that question for us. Because Exodus 39, as Spencer said, is all about the priests in their role in the tabernacle being clothed with the right clothes for their service to God and to his people. There was a specific set of garments that the priest had to wear. Clothing, garments that were specified by God. And this evening we're in that repeated tabernacle section as we work our way through Exodus. God has brought the Israelites into a covenant relationship with himself. They are his treasured possession. That covenant relationship also means that God will come and live amongst his people. He's already meticulously described the tabernacle to them, to Moses and the people, in chapters 25 to 31. We're now in the repeated section of that, chapters 36 to 39, where God's people make the tabernacle in exactly the way that God has described it to Moses. The tabernacle looking something like that. Mark me of the next one, just to give us an idea of what it is we're talking about. And chapter 39 covers the priest's clothes again for us, as repeated from chapter 28. But I want to start by saying this about the priest's clothes. They were holy clothes for serving in a holy place. That's what Exodus 39 shows us. Holy clothes for serving in a holy place. Verse 1 of chapter 39. From the blue, purple, and scarlet yarn, they made woven garments, clothes, for ministering, for serving in the sanctuary. Sanctuary being the holy place, the tabernacle that we just saw. They also made sacred garments, holy clothes, for Aaron, the chief who was going to be the chief priest, as the Lord commanded Moses. Holy clothes for serving in a holy place. Made exactly to the specification that God has commanded to Moses when he was on top of Mount Sinai the first time round. So what did this outfit consist of? Could we have the next picture, Mark? Well, here's roughly a picture, just to give us something visual to look at as we work our way through these verses of chapter 39. Firstly, there was the ephod. It's kind of labelled there for us. Verse 2. They made the ephod of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn and of finely twisted linen. They hammered out thin sheets of gold and cut strands to be worked into the blue, purple and scarlet yarn and fine linen. The work of a skilled craftsman. They made shoulder pieces for the ephod, which were attached to two of its corners so that it could be fastened. Its skillfully woven waistband was like it, of one piece with the ephod, and made with gold and with blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and with finely twisted linen, as the Lord commanded Moses. They mounted the onyx stones in gold filigree settings and engraved them like a seal with the names of the sons of Israel. Then they fastened them on the shoulder pieces of the ephod as memorial stones for the sons of Israel, as the Lord commanded Moses. See, the ephod, as labelled there, was the first layer. It's underneath that breastpiece that's got the 12 precious stones on it, as the picture shows us. See, it was an unusual garment, but it did become symbolic for the entire priesthood. It was a sort of sleeveless vest that was attached by means of two shoulder straps. Those shoulder straps were the most important part of the ephod because of what they symbolised, as verses 6 and 7 say, specifically verse 7. The shoulder pieces had precious stones attached to them. Those stones were memorial stones for the sons of Israel. The priest entered into the tabernacle, the sanctuary, the holy dwelling place for a holy God, and took God's people in with him, carrying them on his shoulders, symbolically. Secondly, there's the breastpiece. It's described in two parts for us in this chapter. Firstly, verse 8, they fashioned the breastpiece, the work of a skilled craftsman. They made it like the ephod, of gold and of blue, purple and scarlet yarn, and a finely twisted linen. It was square, a span long and a span wide, and folded double. Then they mounted four rows of precious stones on it. In the first row there was a ruby, a topaz and a beryl. The second row a turquoise, a sapphire, an emerald. In the third row a jacinth, an agate and an amethyst. In the fourth row a chrysolite, an onyx and a jasper. They were mounted in gold filigree settings. There were 12 stones, one for each of the names of the sons of Israel, each engraved like a seal with the name of one of the 12 tribes. It's omitted here from chapter 39, but in Exodus chapter 28, verse 15, it was known as the breastpiece for making decisions. Verse 15 of chapter 28 says this: fashion a breastpiece for making decisions, the work of a skilled craftsman. And when we looked at it at that time, those verses in chapter 28 helped us to see that it was for casting judgment. The priest sought God's will for the Israelites as a nation. There was a pouch inside the breastpiece where the Urim and the Thummim were placed. And when we looked at it at the time, we suggested that they were basically holy dice that the high priest used in order to seek the will of God, to seek God's wisdom for the Israelite nation as a whole. So as part of the priest's clothes, it was called a breastpiece for making decisions. And the emphasis here in chapter 39, and like the purpose of the ephod, the breastpiece was a visual representation of Israel, of God's people, because it was decorated with these 12 precious stones, each one of them engraved with one of the names of Israel's tribes. And secondly, the breastpiece was attached to the ephod itself. Verse 15, for the breastpiece they made braided chains of pure gold like a rope. They made two gold filigree settings and two gold rings and fastened the rings to two of the corners of the breastpiece. They fastened the two gold chains to the rings at the corners of the breastpiece and the other ends of the chains to the two settings, attaching them to the shoulder pieces of the ephod at the front. They made two gold rings and attached them to the other two corners of the breastpiece on the inside edge next to the ephod. Then they made two more gold rings and attached them to the bottom of the shoulder pieces on the front of the ephod, close to the seam, just above the waistband of the ephod. They tied the rings of the breastpiece to the rings of the ephod with blue cord, connecting it to the waistband so that the breastpiece would not swing out from the ephod, as the Lord commanded Moses. So basically the golden chains, they keep it in its position, its place on front of the priest where it belonged. But more importantly than that, the breastpiece showed the people that the priest carried their concerns close to his heart and sought God's will, sought God's wisdom for them as a people on their behalf. Then there's the robe, another piece to this set of clothing. Verse 22, they made the robe of the ephod entirely of blue cloth, the work of a weaver, with an opening in the center of the robe like the opening of a collar and a band around this opening so that it would not tear. They made pomegranates of blue, purple and scarlet yarn and finely twisted linen around the hem of the robe. They made bells of pure gold and attached them around the hem between the pomegranates. The bells and pomegranates alternated around the hem of the robe to be worn for ministering, as the Lord commanded Moses. It was a long, seamless garment of royal blue. The robe was rich in its significance as well, because it was woven from a single piece of cloth, and has been suggested that that was to show what kind of wholeness, kind of integrity God demanded in his priests. And when we looked at it in chapter 28, we couldn't really work out why pomegranates were sewn on. Something I'd read this week suggested it was a sign of fruitfulness for the priest. But the bells there, they were put on as a mark of respect for God. Because in the time and the culture of the Israelites, people just didn't barge in on somebody important. They were announced to the person beforehand, and then they entered into the important person's presence. And the bells played that kind of role for the priest. They announced to God that the priest was coming into his presence because they rang. But they also indicated that the robe was being worn. The priest was showing his obedience to God as he came into the holy place to serve. We read this back in chapter 28, verse 35. Aaron must wear it, the robe, when he ministers. The sound of the bells will be heard when he enters the holy place before the Lord and when he comes out, so that he will not die. Well, the final piece of clothing for the priest to wear, that was the turban. Verse 27, for Aaron and his sons, they made tunics of fine linen, the work of a weaver, the turban of fine linen, the linen headbands and the undergarments of finely twisted linen. The sash was of finely twisted linen and blue, purple and scarlet yarn, the work of an embroiderer, as the Lord commanded Moses. They made the plate, the sacred diadem, out of pure gold and engraved on it like an inscription on a seal, holy to the Lord. Then they fastened a blue cord to it to attach it to the turban, as the Lord commanded Moses. I read something that just summarizes the turban up very nicely for us. I hope you'll find this helpful. The high priest's crowning glory was his turban, which had a golden plate summarizing his whole priestly calling. It read, holy to the Lord. He was holy for the people before God. The people were not holy. They kept sinning against God. So how could they enter his holy presence? They couldn't. But they had a priest who could enter on their behalf. As it said, right on the man's forehead, he was holy to the Lord. So the priest had this one outfit for his service, for his work. That was his uniform, a unique uniform that no one else wore in the community of God's people. A unique set of clothes for unique service in a unique place. They were a set of clothes chosen by God for the priest to wear whilst he served at the tabernacle. They were holy clothes for serving in a holy place. The problem was, the priest himself wasn't holy either. Because he too, like the Israelites, well, he had to make sacrifices for his own sin. He had to continually cleanse himself, as we saw at the bronze basin in the courtyard before he entered into the holy place. The place where he'd keep the oil filled up for the lamps to burn, or to replace the bread on the table of bread. Or where he'd stand at the altar of incense and offer prayers up to God for himself and for the people. Or where he'd roll that Urim and Thummim to seek God's wisdom for the nation as a whole. The priest was suitably clothed because God chose these clothes for him to wear, but he was still a sinner. The sacrifices that he made for himself and for the sins of the people, well, it couldn't really deal with his sin. And that's why all of this points us to Jesus. Because he is a superior priest to any of them in the Old Testament. Anybody even today. Hebrews chapter 8, verses 1 to 6 says this. We do have such a high priest who sat down at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven and who serves in the sanctuary. The true tabernacle set up by the Lord, not by man. Every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices. And so it was necessary for this one also to have something to offer. If he were on earth, he would not be a priest. For there are already men who offer the gifts prescribed by the law. They serve at a sanctuary that is a copy and shadow of what is in heaven. This is why Moses was warned when he was about to build the tabernacle, see to it that you make everything according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. But the ministry Jesus has received is as superior to theirs as the covenant of which he is mediator is superior to the old one. And it is founded on better promises. Jesus is superior. He is the best priest that you and I need before God. Yes, Exodus 39 is about holy clothes for serving in a holy place. But it's only a copy It's only a shadow of the heavenly reality. It's all completely fulfilled by Jesus. We have the next slide, please, Mark. So we need to come back to our initial question that we asked at the beginning, that the Christian must ask, which was, what is the right outfit that I need to wear as I follow Jesus? Spiritually, what do I need to wear? But also, if you're not a Christian here this evening, the only way for you to come to God, to have a relationship with God for yourself, is to come to Jesus, the best high priest, because he is the only priest you need. Well, why, you might ask? Well, that's a great question. The answer to that question and the previous one, well, they're both found in Jesus' superiority as the best priest for us today. Jesus in himself, Jesus clothes us in a spiritual sense with himself. Those are the clothes that we need to put on. But you may ask, are you sure that he's qualified to be my priest? He may clothe me with himself. He may be superior to the other priests. But how does he qualify me in order to be the best? And what Jesus clothes us with, well, it does completely qualify us to God. We can be sure of that. Because his ability to qualify us, clothe us, is seen in his superiority. We've got five things that we're just going to look at very briefly to see this. We're going to go through them quite quickly. I'll say why we need to afterwards, just for the next few minutes, to see that Jesus is fully qualified to clothe us with himself because he is superior to any and every other. They'll come up on the screen for us as we go through them. Firstly, Jesus serves us in a superior place. Hebrews chapter 9, verse 24. For Christ did not enter a man-made sanctuary that was only a copy of the true one. He entered heaven itself, now to appear for us in God's presence. That's where Jesus is, physically, in his resurrected body, in heaven, and so fully in God's presence for us. Why would we not choose Jesus? He's with God right now, in his presence. Secondly, Jesus serves us with a superior righteousness. And it's important to know that his righteousness is intrinsic to his person. He is of himself fully and completely righteous. Righteous coming from that Hebrew word meaning straightness. And used for Jesus, it shows us that he is the only person to have ever lived perfectly in a way that obeyed God's law in every way. Again, Hebrews 7, verse 26. Such a high priest meets our need, one who is holy. He is blameless, he is pure, he is set apart from sinners. He is exalted above the heavens. Jesus was obedient to God without any flaws or weaknesses or shortcomings. He is righteous. He is perfectly, if we can put it like this, in line or straight with God's law. If you held up God's law like a plumb line, it would hang perfectly straight like a plumb line would. And if Jesus was to stand in front of it or behind it, well, he'd match it perfectly. He'd stand perfectly straight with it, be fully in line with God's law against our own righteousness. It would be like holding up a piece of string without a weight at the bottom, just being blown by the wind. We just don't measure up to God's standard. That's why Jesus is fully qualified to clothe us, because he does so with his righteousness, his obedience. Thirdly, Jesus serves us with superior comfort. As we've seen, the high priest carried the people close to his heart on the breastpiece. Yet for all of his sympathy for the people, he couldn't really understand exactly what they were going through. Only someone who had endured the same temptations, only somebody who'd suffered the most severe hardships could really understand and sympathize with the people. And Jesus can really understand as he suffered death and persecution and endured temptation to the point of having victory over Satan. Hebrews 4:15 says this, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin. No other can comfort us in the same way that Jesus can. He knows exactly what it's like to suffer and face temptation." That's also why he's better than any other. Because there's nothing that you or I can say to him that he doesn't know how it makes us feel. Because his comfort for us comes out of and after that same experience of pain, hardship and suffering that you or I might be having right now. Why would we not come to Jesus? Fourthly, Jesus serves us by superior length of service. Well, that's eternity. That the high priests of Israel, well, they've all died. They're no longer able to help anyone, but Jesus lives forever. Hebrews 7, verse 23. Now there have been many of those priests since death prevented them from continuing in office. But because Jesus lives forever, he has a permanent priesthood. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede for them. An eternal length of service. No one else can do that. Only Jesus. Fifthly and finally, best of all, Jesus serves us with a superior sacrifice. Jesus shed his own blood for us. He offered himself as the final sacrifice of atonement. Sacrifice that makes us one with God. That sacrifice that fully deals with our sin. Fully deals with God's right anger at our sin. Hebrews chapter 9 verse 25. Nor did Jesus enter heaven to offer himself again and again, the way the high priest enters the most holy place every year with blood that is not his own. Then Christ would have had to suffer many times since creation of the world. But now he has appeared once for all at the end of the ages to do away with sin by the sacrifice of himself. Now no more sacrifices are to be made. Jesus was the full and final sacrifice. And as such, he fully removes our sin from us. And so he's superior in every way. All of those five things help us to understand that Jesus is fully qualified to clothe us with himself. But it's not just a kind of intellectual exercise that we need to go through. What is the result of Jesus clothing us in that way with his superiority? Well, it makes us holy. That's what we need to be able to have a right relationship with God. We need to be holy because God is holy. God is without any sin. He is perfect in every way. That the priest had to be holy. Exodus 39 helps us to see that. His turban revealed that. He had to be clothed in the way that God commanded so that he could serve in the tabernacle, the holy place. And so he could enter into God's holy presence. And we too must be clothed with Jesus as God commands. Because it's only Jesus who can qualify us because of his superiority as the only priest we need. Because he makes us holy. But do you believe that? If you're not a Christian, then that's why you need Jesus. Because only he can deal with your sin and make you holy. Only he can qualify you to come into God's presence. You need to ask him to do that, which he'll do because he has done it all on the cross for you. That's what you need to trust in to make you right with God. And if you're a Christian, then do you believe this evening that you're holy? Do you believe that because you trust in Jesus, as God looks at you, as it were, he sees all of Jesus' superiority because you're clothed with him? His righteousness as belonging to you because you're clothed with Jesus. You're clothed with his righteousness, with his full obedience to God's law. Because of that, God looks upon you as holy, so with great joy, as his treasured possession. Because that's exactly how he looks at you this evening. He sees you with great joy. He sees you as something that's precious to him. He looks at you as you would perhaps look upon a personal valuable item. If you've ever seen the TV program Antiques Roadshow, I'm sure you've seen that look many times on people's faces. You know, when they kind of hand over the painting or the statue or the piece of jewelry to the professional, and they kind of have a look at it for a few seconds, turn it over and then turn it back, and then they talk about it for a minute or two to tell us where it came from and the line that it's kind of part of and all the rest of it. And then they say what it's worth, and they kind of roll off the tongue. Well, it's somewhere between £1.5 and £2 million. I know that's a little bit of exaggeration, but you know what I mean? When the person stands there and they hear those words, how big their eyes go. Their eyes turn into ping pong balls, don't they? Sheer delight that's on their faces because of the value and the worth that has just been ascribed to something that was precious to them. And in God's sight, you're so much more valuable and precious to him as I am than a piece of jewelry or an antique painting. He looks at you and me with even more delight. You are precious to him. You bring him such joy because of Jesus, because you're clothed in Jesus. Jesus has qualified you. Jesus has clothed you with himself. you are holy. The difficulty is that, and maybe it's sometimes, maybe that's most of the time, maybe it's even right now this evening for you, you believe that your sin gets in the way of God's vision. Your sin becomes a bit of a block or a barrier, like clouds passing through the sky when they come in front of the sun and stop the sun's rays. So your sin obscures God's sight as he looks at you, and he only sees your sin. But that's not true. But I'm still a sinner, you may say. If you could just see my heart, if you could read my mind, you'd say something different. And you may think or believe that at times. The problem is, and this is a disastrous consequence that we mentioned earlier, you're now starting to choose the wrong clothes to wear as you follow Jesus. You've taken off what Jesus gives to you and you've put on something else. And the result is that what you're trying to do is hang the curtains back up onto the tabernacle that Jesus has torn down for you. See, picture the tabernacle with me in your mind, because it points us to the heavenly reality. It does help us to understand that Jesus, well, he walked out from behind the curtain of the most holy place when he came into this world. And he walked through the holy place and out through the curtain and into the courtyard, the place where the only place in a tabernacle area where Israelites could come and go freely. I mean, imagine the Israelite faces if they saw that happen, saw a man just walk out of the most holy place. They were terrified of the most holy place. And then Jesus offers himself as the burnt offering. Remember, the priest placed his hand on the animal to symbolically transfer the people's sin onto it. But this time, Jesus places your hand on his own head. And he says to you that he's taken all your sin, every bit of it, everything in your past, everything from your future. And you might ask him, why, Jesus, why? And he says, because I love you deeply. And he climbs onto the altar and he faces the punishment from his father's right anger for you and dies as a result. But then he raises back to life after 3 days and he walks up to the curtain of the holy place. And he doesn't just kind of open the curtain. You know, when you do that in the morning, you just kind of gently peel the curtains back to look outside. The curtains that are made in all that precious material that we saw, in that splendor and the glory that they had. He doesn't just open them. He rips them down and he chucks them to the side. And then he walks up to the next curtain that's in front of the most holy place. And he does exactly the same there. He rips that curtain down and just throws it to the side. Because those curtains are now useless. And then he comes back out to the courtyard and he says to you, do you trust me? Do you trust me? You can only say yes because you're just amazed at what he's just done for you. At such a deep expression of love for you. And he takes you by the hand and he leads you straight into the most holy place. Directly into God's presence. You've got no fear of God's anger, nothing to fear, because Jesus has dealt with it all on the altar. So if you think that God's sight of you is obscured because of your sin, then what you're doing is starting to pick those curtains back up and you're trying to hang them back over the most holy place and the holy place. You're undoing what Jesus has done for you, because Jesus has taken them down forever. Your sin has been conquered by Jesus. It has no power over you. Don't live like it does. Don't let it control you, because it will want to. Instead, follow Jesus in the truth of how God sees you as he looks at you with great joy as his treasured possession. Yes, we need to repent of our sin, because as we follow Jesus this week, we'll need to be clothed by him with God's help and the help of the Holy Spirit to remember that from now and into eternity, God looks at you as he does me with great joy as his treasured possession because of Jesus and his superiority, because of his righteousness. Ask God to help you to remember this week in your prayers that even though you sin and repent and know you've been forgiven, that over and above that, you remember that God looks at you with great joy as his treasured possession. Because of Jesus, as you're clothed with him, and follow Jesus in the truth of that, because your sin doesn't get in the way of God's vision when he looks at you. He sees a treasured possession, clothed with Jesus, and that brings him such delight.